Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Has the COVID-19 pandemic created a breakthrough for school choice? Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. As the pandemic school year begins to wind slowly toward graduation, dozens of school choice bills have been introduced in various state legislatures. Kim, can you give us an overview of what's going on? And do you think this is a potential watershed for school choice policies?
Well, overall, we have some 50 school choice bills that have been introduced in 30 states just this year. Some of the big ones in recent weeks that have managed to cross the bar. In West Virginia, the legislature has set up education savings accounts for kids. By law, they have to be up and functional by next year. They'd be available to all kids currently registered in public school systems. They think they would end up at, about $4,600 a kid, which could be used, families could use them to fund private school tuition or tutors or more. In South Dakota, the governor there, Kristi Noem, just signed a bill expanding eligibility for the state's tax credit scholarship. It's available to kids that are in private school. Last year, there were about 800 kids who got these scholarships worth about $1,800 each. Now kids will be, more kids will be open to having it. And then in Kentucky, the Democratic governor there, Andy Beshear, just vetoed the legislature's own tax credit scholarship. And then the way these scholarships work is that basically they're private donations that are encouraged by tax credits. This one would have provided up to about $25 million to lower and middle income kids, again, to use for private tuition and other things. What was interesting is he vetoed it. The legislature actually overrode that veto. So that's headed to fruition. And you've got them in Arizona and Florida and Georgia. They're happening all over the country. And there could be no question this is a direct reaction to intransigent teachers' unions, public schools that have failed to reopen, especially because there have been so many private schools that have reopened and done such a phenomenal job. And parents are voting with their feet.
And the design of these programs can differ quite a bit. The West Virginia Education Savings Account, I was looking into that a little bit. And as I understand it, reading some reports in the local papers there, essentially it gives parents who with kids in public schools the option to take some of the per pupil state funding that the school gets for their kid and to use it elsewhere, to use it for private school tuition, for tutoring, for learning aids, things like that. Iowa is another place where there's a bill that's been percolating for education savings accounts in more limited cases. I think that's only for students in low performing public schools. The tax credit design is essentially that a corporation, a business, donates money to a scholarship fund. They get a tax credit in exchange for that donation. And then the scholarship fund essentially doles out the money. And so, Bill, it can be a little hard to keep track of always the different designs, the different ambitions, the different scopes of all these bills. But it does seem like all of the movement, or at least a lot of the movement, is in one direction.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up. Look, there are a lot of different ways to increase school choice. Also, we didn't mention charter schools. For example, New York has now reached its cap, or the cap in New York City. If they're going to open more charter public schools to students, but there are a variety of mechanisms. I'm for sort of let a thousand flowers bloom and let's see what works best. Let's learn from others. Example, as you mentioned, tax credits are one, education savings account, but they're all unified also by the idea, the lesson we've learned from the great COVID pandemic, that the teachers unions do not put the interests of their students first. I mean, a lot of them went back to school yesterday for the first time, right? And the superintendent of the Catholic schools in Massachusetts points out, we've been, you know, open for in-person instruction since the beginning of the year. So a lot of this, a lot of their claims why they won't come for health reasons, they're just not borne out by the facts. And a lot of parents, I think, have realized, wow, I'm really held hostage by the schools, meaning the teachers unions. You know, if they don't want to go back to work, my kids don't go back to school. So I think a lot of this is pushed by people trying to give more options, make the public school sector a lot more flexible in responding to parents and students' needs. And it's just not designed that way.
And that's part of why I wonder whether this is looking like a watershed. Here's a quote from Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds that stuck out to me. She said, "If there's one thing the pandemic has taught us about education, it's that our parents need choice, and it's not just in-person versus virtual." And Kim, I mean, I wonder if there are people, a significant number of people who might have rejected that argument or not been receptive to it in 2019 and who are now rethinking things and might be on her side.
Well, one of the things we have pointed out, and I have heard other people make the case, is that this pandemic has exposed within education, you know, this is a great civil rights fight of our time. And I think what's really notable is that prior to the pandemic, you could have spoken to a sizable portion of a lot of lower income minority communities for whom they totally understand the value of school choice. We've talked before about the extraordinary number of Black African American or African American women in Florida who voted for Ron DeSantis to be governor there, in part because he unabashedly ran on a school choice agenda and his Democratic opponent said that he would wind down school choice. And there was a big reaction to that. But I think what you're seeing the pandemic has done is expose for much wider swaths of Americans the huge problems with teachers' unions and the issues with poor education as well, too, in our public schools. And one reason, by the way, I mean, I'm in favor of any school choice bills that are going along. But one of the reasons I particularly love that West Virginia bill is that it really is choice in the most wonderful way, in that this is parents who are going to finally be able to access money that they pay into the system, but which really doesn't benefit them much in the end, they're finding. You know, I mean, schools are essentially funded by property taxes and other local taxes. And then you're kind of stuck with what you got. And what you can do in West Virginia now, or when this gets set up, is take that $4,600 and use it to go to a school that truly is of your choice. And that puts the exact right accountability on the school system. It means that more and more parents are going to withdraw if the school system can't perform. And you imagine what you could do in other places with that. I was looking it up. In 2017, New York City School District spent $25,200 per pupil. I mean, imagine if parents were able to access even a portion of that and use it for a school that's a better fit for their kid.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. If the pandemic school year is changing people's minds about school choice, which is sort of my thesis here, and if it's opening people's eyes, Bill, to the interests of the teachers' unions, there seems to be no sign of that ending soon. There's a Politico story now making the rounds, and I'll read the first two lines of it. It says, California teachers are ready to go back to the classroom, but the state's largest union has a new ask: free child care for their own kids. The demand is salt in the wound for parents who struggled with distance learning at home amid a intense reopening negotiations that have dragged on for a year, unquote. So if this thesis is right, then there may be more of it that we more minds that will be changed even over the next 3, 4, 6 months.
Salt in the wound is exactly right. A lot of people are struggling, and a lot of working families, you know, with both parents working. If the kids are home because they can't attend classes in person, it makes it hard for one or both of the parents to go to work. So there's a lot of pain out there, and it really galls a lot of these people. No one's paying their kids to be minded. And yet the teachers union is making it a condition. It's, you know, it's back to never let a crisis go to waste. One reason they're in a position to make these demands is because our system is so one-sided. In other words, it's a government monopoly. And that's why the teachers have so much power. That's also why they oppose school choice, because if with school choice, they lose their power. People have an option. If they're happy with the schools run by the teachers unions, they can stay. And when I say run by the teachers unions, I don't mean that just figuratively. We've seen even some of the more progressive mayors, Lori Lightfoot in Chicago and Bill de Blasio in New York, they've had their own battles with the teachers union trying to get them to go back to classes. And we've learned, one, the teachers unions do not put the priorities of student first. We also learn how much power they have, that they really determine what's going to happen in the school systems, not the people ostensibly running it, and certainly not the people elected to run it.
And how about this fall? I mean, it seems we still in some places have a lack of clarity there. There's a Washington Post headline over the weekend: will school be back to normal this fall? Kind of, sort of, maybe. And it quotes, Kim, it quotes the head of the National Education Association saying she wants more research on COVID spread before teachers go back. And I mean, that's a ways off. And we are in a situation where all Americans by then will have access to, all adults will have access to COVID vaccines. It seems like what would satisfy?
Nothing. And that's what's so crazy about that statement. Is it, look, we know the relative risk of this to kids, which is very, very, very small. And by the way, thank goodness, right? Imagine how much more dreadful this pandemic would have been if it had equally affected or disproportionately affected children, as some prior viral diseases have done. You'll have teachers that are all fully vaccinated probably by this spring. And it's interesting, the argument that the president of the NEA made. She said that we couldn't do this without more research because it might disproportionately impact our Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities. And what this just fails to completely take on board is that it is those very communities that are suffering most in these inner city schools from not going back to face-to-face learning. They're being hurt disproportionately by the shutdowns. And yet you still see it across the country. It's amazing. One of the things that came out in that story, San Francisco school districts are still fully online. Newark school districts are still fully online. Philadelphia is almost entirely online. It's only got kids in pre-K to second grade going to school once in a while. New Jersey districts are fighting going back in court. And in January, just over half of all elementary and middle schools offered face-to-face classes full-time. That's crazy, especially like the high schools, you know, the number is significantly lower than that. And yet there are other school districts that have been online or been back in person for the whole year and show that this is eminently possible. So this is politics.
Well, to play devil's advocate here, the argument you often hear from public school unions, advocates, is essentially that these school choice programs, whether it's an education savings account that allows a family to afford private school tuition, or whether it's charter schools, that these programs sort of siphon off the best students, the most motivated students, and that it's all a zero-sum game. Bill, what is your response to those arguments?
I think they're complete nonsense. First of all, most of the time that school choice programs have been implemented, there's been an effort to increase spending for traditional public schools more. There's no parity in the spending, you know, in this. The public schools just have more and more, and they argue for more and more, no matter what. And just again, on the idea of siphoning off, they always talk about when there's a successful school, they never look and say, gee, what could we learn from that school? They imply it's cheating or something, or creamed off students. But, you know, in New York, for example, the charter school kids are drawn by lottery. It's all by chance. The idea that they're creaming off the better kids is ridiculous. And yet they outperform the traditional public school students, and they outperform at the top. They excel. They're some of the best public schools in the country. So this is just an excuse. There are many reasons you could say for failure. What parents want to hear is, here's this school, and this is why it's successful. There's a million excuses, and usually those excuses come down to money, and there's no correlation, as we've seen, between the funding schools get and the performance. A lot of the really good schools are, like a lot of the Catholic schools, have better results, and they're working on a shoestring. They don't have a lot of cash. So again, it's just another excuse for failure.
A couple of other arguments I would add to that, I guess, are first that no one's child is a public resource. And they, you know, kids do not exist for the benefit of these institutions called public schools. And no family should be asked or expected to send their kid to a worse school, or to pass up an opportunity to choose a better school for the benefit of the school as an institution. And the second, Kim, is that there's a lot of research that does not seem to bear out these claims that are made about siphoning off, or that choice is a zero sum game for public schools versus private schools or charters.
No, right. There is a lot of standardized test data that show private schools often outperform public schools. But these are with kids that are not necessarily, it's not because they've been creamed off. These are kids that have been taken into these programs because of lotteries, et cetera. A lot of them were struggling kids until they managed to get into a private school option via a voucher program or something else. So there's a lot of data out there. But to your point about kids as public resources, I go back again. This is why I really like that West Virginia program, because too often, private school is a luxury of the upper middle class and the wealthy. You know, they can afford to pay those taxes, and then they can also afford to send their kids to a school of their choice. And we've seen a little bit more of a breakthrough in that area with some of these lottery programs, et cetera, and scholarships. But when you really are getting school choice, it's when parents are getting some access to those tax dollars, and are not being forced to just take what the state supplies them on the back of their own paychecks.
Yeah, I mean, when I mentioned that research, one specific study I had in mind, and the journal had an editorial on it recently, looked at the correlations between states with higher education freedom, as the authors called it, and test scores. And what the study found is that, just reading a little bit here and paraphrasing, higher levels of education freedom are significantly associated with higher NAEP, meaning test scores, achievement levels in reading and in math for eighth graders. That's data from 2003 to 2019. So a lot of data there. And the implication of that, Bill, is it seems to be that increasing choice in the state increases the quality, the effectiveness of the teaching overall in that state. And it sounds like the argument essentially is that competition, a little bit of competition, puts everybody on their best game.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's one reason when they complain that it doesn't do anything for the kids in the traditional schools. I mean, I find that argument odd to begin with, because if you're running a charter school or a private school or a parochial school, your job is not to improve the public schools, just as their job isn't to improve your performance. But the competition does. They know. And the competition doesn't matter unless people have real choice. Most people can't really afford it, especially in the inner cities. Even the modest tuitions at Catholic schools, they can't afford it. So that's what these programs are, to give people real choice. During COVID, we've seen in the beginning a lot of Catholic schools closed, especially those in cities and so forth where they don't have money. But then we also saw a flight to Catholic schools from people leaving the public schools. I mean, I believe there are an estimated 500,000 fewer kids in traditional public schools now than there were at the beginning of the pandemic. These were mostly in the wealthier areas. And I think the competition, when there's choice and competition, then people have options. You know, it's not a magic one solution. There, you know, we have choice in restaurants, right? No one's forced to go to any restaurant, but at least and it means there are still bad restaurants, but you don't have to go to them and pay your money and have no option. Imagine if you were just stuck in one. So I think choice is certainly a component of building up a better school system, better public school system that would serve all kids. Look, if you look at, especially in our most progressive cities, if you look at the inner city school systems and the performance of Latino and African American children, this is a national indictment. We should be marching in the streets against this. It's just outrageous, the failures. And then they explain it away or blame it on the kids. There's no reason for this. And I think people are starting to realize that. And that's why choice has become more popular. And I believe there are also studies from a long time ago in Milwaukee, one of the first places to introduce choice, about the improvement in some of the traditional public schools there when choice was introduced.
So what about the politics of this? Kim, you mentioned Florida and the 2018 election of Governor Ron DeSantis. That was a very close election. And as you said, 18% of Black women there voted for the Republican Ron DeSantis in a campaign where a school choice, the education programs Florida has, were that was one big issue. And does that suggest that Republicans have a winning issue here and one that's getting more popular?
It shows the power of issues with voters. And I think that has to be combined too with the Republican message that they are focused on those questions and about the outcomes for these communities. I mean, it's been marred and sort of overshadowed by November election and the aftermath of that. But, you know, think back to that Republican National Convention, which was unlike any I had ever witnessed in my time covering politics. And it was really impressive to see. It was a GOP celebration of all the different people in the country and the reasons that different minorities in particular had come to the Republican Party, whether it was, you know, the young Latina businesswoman or people escaping oppressive regimes, and really showcasing all of those voices. And you saw a difference. It wasn't enormous in the African American community, although far more Black men voted for Donald Trump this year than had in the past. Big shifts in the Latino community, especially along certain areas of the country. And it kind of shows that if you can, you know, do outreach to different Americans and then really show that you care about issues like school choice. Yeah, they're very powerful issues for voters.
I'll cite one last number and then give you the final word, Bill. And the number is from an Associated Press analysis in December. And it says that data from 33 states shows public K-12 enrollment had dropped by more than 500,000 students. And on one hand, that's 2% of the total. So that's not an enormous share of public school enrollment. On the other hand, Bill, it seems to me that that's 500,000 more parents and families who are thinking about these issues and wondering why that public school money is still going to the public school that their kid is no longer attending.
Yes, it's been brought home to them in very real ways. I also think probably if you broke down that number and you looked at like big cities like New York City, the impact might be a lot more profound in how many people are leaving. Clearly, a lot of these people found they may have just moved to their summer home or just outside the city in some suburb. The question is whether they're going to come back to people. I agree with Kim. What we really need now are more educational campaigns about choice and why this is the answer. The Republican Party did an excellent job at the convention because they not only showed the issue as an issue, but the human impact. I believe one woman had a special needs child. It was very powerful in showing all these diverse groups of people who benefited from it. And I think we're nowhere out of the woods, and we need a much larger campaign. But I think the teachers unions are so powerful within the Democratic Party, it's going to cause some discomfort among the politicians and their backers in the teachers union. You know, for years, the teachers union could just threaten to run someone against you in the primary and you'd probably roll over. I'm not sure that's going to be the same going forward.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.